that I wanted to share with you about the problem that he'll be removing. The first one that he'll be working on today is Trinavata. So this is the third demon from Bhaktivinoda Kaur's sheep. The whirlwind demon Trinavata represents the vanity of false learning, the consequent use of faulty arguments and dry logic, the quest for mukti, and association with such falsely proud people. This includes all types of atheists believing in material causality. Being merciful on seeing the affection of the devotee for him, Baby Krishna kills Trinavata and removes these obstacles to the devotee's worship. The third obstacle is false arguments. It is difficult for one's ecstatic emotion to be awakened until Trinavata, in the form of a whirlwind, is killed in Braj. In the form of Trinavata, the arguments of philosophers, Buddhists, and logicians are all obstacles to cultivating ecstatic emotions of Braj. Now, what I wanted to do here is to have a look, before we go into this for ourselves, what it means for us as aspiring Braj Bhaktas, I wanted to have a look at Sri Krishna's Samhita and Sri Chaitanya's Shikshamrita in historical perspective. Because this has a lot to do with what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying at this time. So Krishna's Samhita was written in 1880. At that time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was 6 years old. Vimala Prasad, 6-year-old boy. Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita was written in 1886. At this time, upper sampradayas, Mayavadism, and bogus philosophies were the norm. Gaudiya Vaishnavism was in a very bad shape. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace had not yet been discovered. That didn't happen until 1893. And Chaitanya Charitamrita was a lost scripture.
Lost?
It was lost. Bhaktivinoda spent many years searching for Chaitanya Charitamrita. It was a lost scripture. And he found it and wrote commentary on it in 1895. So he wrote these books quite some time before these major things happened in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So there was no strong, pure sense of Gaudiya culture, nor an institutional structure to support such a culture. Not a very supportive scenario for a serious sadhaka, to say the least. Can you imagine trying to practice Krishna consciousness at that time? No institutional support, no cultural support, massive upper sampradaya influence, Mayavada influence, so many things. So very, very different scenario now. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have a very strong and protective and supportive philosophy and culture. It's there to nourish us on a daily basis. This is unique. It's there to nourish us on a daily basis, and it's global. I don't know of any other spiritual institution. You can fly from India to Japan and have exactly the same program. You can try from Japan to Amsterdam, you'll have exactly the same program. We take it for granted, but it's such an incredible support for the sadhaka. So Prabhupada's mercy is actually protecting us from so much of the externals that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is highlighting here when he's talking about Trinavada. On a personal level, we don't have to deal so much with faulty arguments, with dry logic, with Buddhism, the quest for mukti. Because of the firm philosophical foundation given to contemporary Gaudiya Vaishnavism by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada. It's such an amazingly merciful, powerful, transcendental trio. Inconceivable, the work that those three Vaishnavas did. Now, it's good to remember that these three great souls weren't just philosophers. They're Mahabhagavats. Everything they said and did verified and strengthened their followers' understanding. So it wasn't just that they gave a philosophy. Anybody can go and speak a few words. But the point is they had the potency of Mahabhagavats. They were preaching Bhagavat. They were living Bhagavat. And by them speaking and doing, just being a walking Bhagavat, they were verifying and strengthening the philosophy so much. And quite often in humorous and heart-touching ways. I know that there are a couple of stories that Prabhupada told about this particular problem we're going to be operating on today that have been in my mind for many years. And every time I see a circumstance that's dealing with this anatta, I remember the story. It's just the brilliance of Prabhupada, that he could just put things in a funny way. And so I wanted to share a couple of those with you because they're very, very powerful. The first one was one that I always think of this whenever I see devotees arguing, whenever I see materialists arguing. I mean, it's just such an amazing story that Prabhupada tells here about the futility of false argument. And when we're talking false argument, what we really mean by that is argument that's based on false ego. That's what false argument is. It's not shastrically based. It's based on my ego and what I think is what counts. So false argument, we're talking false ego-based argument. This is Prabhupada telling a story. First it begins with him, a little introduction. Prabhupada wanted his devotee scientists to form the Bhaktivedanta Institute. By writing books and giving lectures, they should destroy the theories that life comes from matter and that there is no supreme being. The atheistic scientists will be very stubborn, he warned them. To illustrate the stubbornness of the materialists, Prabhupada told the story of scissors philosophy. Two men were arguing about which cutting instrument should be used, a knife or scissors. Knife, said one. No, scissors, said the other. Their talk became a heated fight. If you don't agree, said the man who advocated the knife, I will throw you in the river. No, I'll never change my mind. It's scissors. So the knife advocate threw the other into the swift running river. He swam for a while, became exhausted, and began to sink. But he was so stubborn about holding his point of view that even after he was sinking under the water to his death, he held up his arm and crossed his fingers back and forth like a pair of scissors cutting. The scientists will be like that, said Prabhupada. Even after feeding them with all logic, still they will say, life comes from matter. But more sane and innocent people will be convinced by Vedic presentation that life comes from life. It's such a vivid example that Prabhupada's given. Simple little story, but I see it. It's a wonderful, another one that's it's very, very sweet. This is something he did. And it really puts the Prabhupada Siddhanta on false logic and argument into a nutshell. One time when Prabhupada was at Bhaktivedanta Manor, a Mayavadi sannyasi came to visit. Srila Prabhupada received him graciously and they had some discussion. When the man departed, he deliberately left behind a big stack of his pamphlets. The pamphlets contained a little essay on the monistic doctrine that all is one, defying the direct meaning of the Vedic scriptures and completely admitting Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The next afternoon, Prabhupada met with the devotees as usual. His practice was to receive a very big plate of fruit and nuts, take some himself, and then ask a disciple to distribute the Mahaprasadam to all the devotees. On this particular day, Prabhupada called for the pamphlets. The devotees were surprised. Why is Prabhupada calling for these pamphlets? When they were brought in, Srila Prabhupada said, distribute one to each of the devotees. The devotees were bewildered as the Mayavadi pamphlets were distributed to one and all in the room. Then Prabhupada said, everyone take a pamphlet, open it up and put it on your hand. He took a few nuts from the plate, began eating them, and then indicated that the rest should be distributed. He said the devotees should use the pamphlets as plates. Lots of devotees mentioned later that Prabhupada was practicing Yukta Vairagya by this simple act. He had found a useful purpose for the atheistic tracts, simultaneously ridiculing their author and yet engaging him in devotional service. You know, Prabhupada was such a genius. So these two little stories, they just, you know, they say that in a nutshell. You know, so Prabhupada really has cut through the essence of this anatta for us. We don't have a really big problem with it. Just because of the nature of the culture he's given, the philosophical base, the structure for both. So we are so fortunate to be born in Prabhupada's time and not in Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's time. It would have been extremely difficult. It's difficult for us now. Can you imagine it? What it would have been like then? So I just wanted to let you know what he had to say about that. I want to read again Trinavata, the third one. The woven demon Trinavata represents the vanity of false learning, the consequent use of faulty arguments and dry logic, the quest for mukti, and the association of such falsely proud people. This includes all types of atheists believing in material causality. Being merciful on seeing the affection of the devotee for him, Baby Krishna kills Trinavata and removes his obstacles to the devotee's worship. This third obstacle is false arguments. It is difficult for one's ecstatic emotion to be awakened until Trinavata in the form of a whirlwind is killed in Braj. In the form of Trinavata, the arguments of philosophers, Buddhists, and logicians are all obstacles to cultivating ecstatic emotions of Braj. So then what's the message that we can learn for us as aspiring Braj Bhaktas? What is the actual message that we can learn from this? Beware of argumentative and offensive mentality. Beware of argumentative and offensive mentality, born of pride in sense of logic, intelligence, and knowledge. Beware of argumentative and offensive mentality, born of pride in a sense of logic, intelligence, and knowledge. Now why? Why is that a problem? It's a big problem. Argumentative mentality will lead to criticism. Criticism will lead to offense. Offense means severe reaction. So this is not really going to help us on our path towards Braj Bhakti. It's going to hinder us. And it's so easy to fall into this mentality. We have to be very vigilant. So what I'd like to do is to share a few stories from Chaitanya Charitamrita. For me, it's very, very interesting that all three of them that I'm going to read, they're short little stories, they're all from Antya Lila. So this is interesting because we're looking at subtle stuff. The gross stuff is gone. Mahaprabhu is associating and surrounded by very highly evolved devotees. But these anathas come in the form of personalities who have problems. And it's interesting to see how he deals with them. The first one actually is Haridas Thakur. And very interesting. It's very interesting. This is from Antya 3, 176 to 213. So here Haridas Thakur is preaching the glories of the holy name. It was mentioned in the assembly that Haridas Thakur chanted the holy names of Krishna 3 lakh times a day. Thus, all the learned scholars began to discuss the glories of the holy name. Some of them said, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is freed from the reactions of all sinful life. Others said, simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, a living being is liberated from material bondage. Haridas Thakur protested, these two benedictions are not the true result of chanting the holy name. By actually chanting the holy name without offenses, one awakens his ecstatic love for the lotus feet of Krishna. Liberation and extinction of the reactions of sinful life are two concomitant byproducts of chanting the holy name of the Lord. An example is found in the gleams of morning sunlight. As the rising sun immediately dissipates all the world's darkness, which is deep like an ocean, so the holy name of the Lord, if chanted once without offenses, can dissipate all the reactions of living beings' sinful life. All glories to the holy name of the Lord, which is auspicious for the entire world. After reciting this verse, Haridas Thakur said, O learned scholars, please explain the meaning of this verse. But the audience requested Haridas Thakur, it is better for you to explain the meaning of this important verse. Haridas Thakur said, as the sun begins to rise, even before visible, it dissipates the darkness of night. With the first glimpse of sunlight, fear of thieves, ghosts, and demons immediately disappears. And when the sun is actually visible, everything is manifest, and everyone begins to perform their religious activities and regulative duties. Similarly, the first hint that offenseless chanting of the Lord's holy name is awakened dissipates the reactions of sinful life immediately. And when one chants the holy name offenselessly, one awakens to service and ecstatic love at the lotus feet of Krishna. Liberation is the insignificant result derived from a glimpse of awakening of offenseless chanting of the holy name. At the house of Aranya and Govardhan Majumdar, a person named Gopal Chakrabarti was officially the chief tax collector. This Gopal Chakrabarti lived in Bengal. His duty as a chief tax collector was to collect 12 lakh coins to deposit in the treasury of the emperor. He had handsome bodily features, and he was learned and youthful, but he could not tolerate the statement that simply by glimpsing the awakening of the Lord's holy name, one can attain liberation. This young man, Gopal Chakrabarti, became very angry upon hearing the statements of Haridas Thakur. He immediately criticized him. Oh, assembly of learned scholars, he said, just hear the conclusion of this emotional devotee. After many, many millions of births, when one is complete in absolute knowledge, one may still not attain liberation. Yet this man says that one can attain it simply by awakening a glimpse of the holy name. Haridas Thakur said, why are you doubtful? The revealed scriptures say that one can attain liberation simply by a glimpse of offenseless chanting of the holy name. For a devotee who enjoys a transcendental bliss of devotional service, liberation is most insignificant. Therefore, pure devotees never desire to achieve liberation. Gopal Chakrabarti said, if one is not liberated by Namabhas, then you may be certain that I'll cut off your nose. Then Haridas Thakur accepted the challenge offered by Gopal Chakrabarti. If by Namabhas liberation is not available, he said, certainly I shall cut off my own nose. All the members of the assembly who had heard the challenge were greatly agitated, and they got up, making a tumultuous sound. Hiranya and Govardhan Majumdar were both immediately chastised, the Brahmin tax collector. The priest named Balaramacharya chastised Gopal Chakrabarti. You are a foolish logician, he said. What do you know about the devotional service of the Lord? You have insulted Haridas Thakur. Thus there will be a dangerous position for you. You should not expect anything auspicious. Then Haridas Thakur got up to leave. And the Majumdars, the masters of Gopal Chakrabarti, immediately dismissed Gopal Chakrabarti from their service. When, with all the members of the assembly, the two Majumdars fell at the lotus feet of Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was smiling, however, and he spoke in a sweet voice. None of you are at fault, he said. Indeed, even this ignorant so-called Brahmin is not at fault, for he is accustomed to dry speculation and logic. One cannot understand the glories of the holy name simply by logic and argument. Therefore, this man cannot possibly understand the glories of the holy name. All of you may go home to your homes. May Lord Krishna bestow his blessings upon you all. Do not be sorry because of my being insulted. Within 3 days, the Brahmana was attacked by leprosy, and as a result, his highly raised nose melted away and fell off. The Brahmin's toes and fingers were beautiful like golden-coloured champa bugs, but because of leprosy, they all withered and gradually melted away. Seeing the condition of Gopal Chakrabarty, everyone was astonished. Everyone praised the influence of Haridas Thakur and offered him obeisances. Although Haridas Thakur, as a Vaishnava, did not seriously take the Brahmana's offense, the Supreme Personality of Godhead could not tolerate it, and thus he made the Brahmana suffer the consequences. A characteristic of a pure devotee is that he excuses any offense by an ignorant rascal. The characteristic of Krishna, however, is that he cannot tolerate blasphemy of his devotees. So we see the simplicity of Vaishnavism here. Haridas is saying, why are you doubtful? What are the scriptures are saying? For us it's so simple. It's so simple. Why are you doubting? Books are saying, Prabhupada's books are saying, what's the problem? But if you have this argumentative mentality, then it's a big problem. And we'll see that with the other examples that we're going to give. This one is a very interesting one. This is Mahaprabhu and Puri. That's a conversation between him and Vallabhabhata. This is from Antia 7, 100 to 125. This is looking at, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning pride. And this is very much looking at that aspect of the samatha. Every day, Vallabhabhata would come to the place of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to engage in unnecessary arguments with Advaita Acharya and other great personalities, such as Sarup Damodar. Whatever conclusions Vallabhabhata eagerly presented were refuted by personalities like Advaita Acharya. Whenever Vallabhabhata entered the society of devotees headed by Advaita Acharya, he was like a duck in a society of white swans. One day, Vallabhabhata said to Advaita Acharya, every living entity is female, Prakriti, and considers Krishna her husband, Pati. It is the duty of a chaste wife devoted to her husband not to utter her husband's name, but all of you chant the name of Krishna. How can this be called a religious principle? Advaita Acharya responded, in front of you is Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the personification of religious principles. You should ask him, for he will give you the proper answer. Hearing this, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my dear Vallabhabhata, you do not know religious principles. Actually, the first duty of a chaste woman is to carry out the order of her husband. The order of Krishna is to chant his name incessantly. Therefore, one who is chaste and adherent to the husband Krishna must chant the Lord's name, for she cannot deny the husband's order. Following this religious principle, a pure devotee of Lord Krishna always chants the holy name. As a result of this, he gets the fruit of ecstatic love for Krishna. Hearing this, Vallabhabhata was speechless. He returned home greatly unhappy and began to consider thus, every day I am defeated in this assembly. If by chance I am one day victorious, that will be a great source of happiness for me, and all my shame will go away. But what means should I adopt to establish my statements? The next day when he came to the assembly of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he sat down offering obeisances to the Lord and said something with great pride. In my commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, I have refuted the explanations of Sridhar Swami. I cannot accept his explanations. Whatever Sridhar Swami reads, he explains according to the circumstances. Therefore, he is inconsistent in his explanations and cannot be accepted as an authority. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smilingly replied, one who does not accept the Swami as an authority, I consider a prostitute. After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very grave. All the devotees present derived great satisfaction from hearing this statement. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descended as an incarnation for the benefit of the entire world. Thus he knew the mind of Vallabhabhata very well. By various hints and refutations, Lord Chaitanya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, corrected Vallabhabhata, exactly as Krishna had cut down the false pride of Indra. An ignorant living being does not recognize his actual profit. Because of ignorance and material pride, he sometimes considers profit a loss. But when his pride is cut down, he can actually see his true benefit. Returning home that night, Balabhadra thought, "Previously at Prayag, Lord Chaitanya was very kind to me. He accepted my invitation with his other devotees, and he was kind to me. Why has he now changed so much here at Jagannath Puri? Being very proud of my learning, I'm thinking, let me become victorious. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, is trying to purify me by nullifying this false pride. For a characteristic of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that he acts for everyone's welfare. I am falsely proud, advertising myself as a learned scholar. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu insults me just to favor me by cutting down this false pride. He is actually acting for my benefit, although I interpret his actions as insult. This is exactly like the incident in which Lord Krishna cut down Indra, the great puffed-up fool, to correct him." Thinking in this way, Balabhadra approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the next morning, and in great humility offered many prayers. He sought shelter and surrendered at the lotus feet of the Lord. So you can see, it actually is such a... For the person who has this problem, you know, they think it's part of life, it's part of them. But to a devotee, to an assembly of Vaishnavas, it's such an apparent problem that this person has. The last one that I'd like to read is very interesting, because Prabhupada, in his purports on this, he explains that where there is argumentative mentality and offense, the reaction will be that we will become speculators.
The reaction of the offense caused by that argumentative.
You hear it. It's very interesting what Prabhupada says.
Can you say it again? Then
I'll let Prabhupada say it. You have a listen to what Prabhupada... I'll point it out exactly when we come to it. But it's very interesting because we see that it's a circle. You have this kind of problem with argumentative mentality, and then we go through this cycle of criticism and offense, and then the reaction to that brings us right back into that same mentality. It's a whirlwind. It's getting
smaller and smaller.
Yeah. It's a whirlwind. It's very interesting what Prabhupada says here. The characteristic of Ramachandra Puri was that he would formerly when Madhavendra Puri was at the last stage of his life, Ramachandra Puri came to where he was staying. Madhavendra Puri was chanting the holy name of Krishna, and sometimes he would cry, "Oh my Lord, I did not get shelter at Mathura." Then Ramachandra Puri was so foolish that he fearlessly dared to instruct his spiritual master. "If you are in full transcendental bliss," he said, "you should now remember only Brahman. Why are you crying?" Hearing this instruction, Madhavendra Puri, greatly angry, rebuked him by saying, "Get out, you sinful rascal. Oh my Lord Krishna, I could not reach you, nor could I reach your abode, Mathura. I am dying in my great unhappiness, and now this rascal has come to give me more pain. Don't show your face to me. Don't show your face to me. Go anywhere else you like. If I die seeing your face, I shall not achieve the destination of my life. I am dying without achieving the shelter of Krishna, and therefore I am greatly unhappy. Now this condemned, foolish rascal has come to instruct me about Brahman." Ramachandra Puri was thus denounced by Madhavendra Puri. Due to his offense, gradually material desire appeared within him. Prabhupada in Purport says here, the word vasana, material desires, refers to dry speculative knowledge. So this material desire gradually appeared in him. And what was it? Dry speculative knowledge. Such speculative knowledge is only material. A person without devotional service who simply wants to know things gains only dry speculative knowledge but no spiritual profit. Even though one is liberated in this life, if one offends the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he falls down in the midst of material desires, of which dry speculation about spiritual realization is one. Nasty. And then the 27th verse is, one who is attached to dry speculative knowledge has no relationship with Krishna. His occupation is criticizing Vaishnavas.
His occupation
is criticizing Vaishnavas. Thus he is situated in criticism. Heavy, I'll read it again. One who is attached to dry speculative knowledge has no relationship with Krishna. His occupation is criticizing Vaishnavas. Thus he is situated in criticism. And then Prabhupada's pulpit is very, very interesting. He takes it a step further. And he says that such a person develops a mentality of a Mayavadi.
Wow.
Listen, it's very interesting. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained in his Anubhasha that the word Nibandha indicates that Ramachandra Puri had a steady desire to criticize others. Impersonalist Mayavadis who have no relationship with Krishna, who cannot take to devotional service, and who simply engage in material arguments to understand Brahman, regard devotional service to Krishna as kam, kanda, or fruitive activities. According to them, devotional service to Krishna is but another means for attaining dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Therefore, they criticize the devotees for engaging in material activities. They think that devotional service is maya, and that Krishna or Vishnu is also maya. Therefore, they are called Mayavadis. Such a mentality awakens in a person who is an offender to Krishna and his devotees.
So like a devotee who's an offender can become a Mayavadi?
Yeah. Not only he can make a dry speculator.
And he won't even
notice
he'll think I'm a devotee.
Yeah. Oh my God. So this cycle, it really is a whirlwind.
It really is a whirlwind
because one offense, consciousness gets covered, this mentality starts to develop, another offense, and we think we're fine. But in fact, these days it's seen as real. You know, the scene is real. To say what you think and have a proper estimate of this devotee and that devotee. You know, but actually it's ridiculous. It's very, very unsafe ground. So I wanted to read these to you because it really brings home that this is a very serious thing, and we should watch ourselves. I don't want, when we're dealing with these anathas, I'm dealing with them for my purification. I don't want to talk about everybody out there. I want to talk about what I can learn from these. And this is something that we really have to be careful about. Okay, so I think we have a very clear idea now of what we're dealing with. And Dr. Krishna Chandra is calling us in for surgery. So, let's have a presentation. Nan Chaitanya Prabhu, would you like to start? Anybody?
Yeah, and what I really like in all these stories when I read them is how clueless Brajbasis are about Krishna. You know, they just don't treat him like Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mm. They think he may be some kind of a demigod or he's just a pious child. And you know, it's just so amazing that he, you know, at such a tender age, he's killing demons, but they do not consider him an extraordinary child.
So anybody else? That's interesting. He's only 1 year old when this happened.
So imagine.
He's 1 year old.
I heard the same thing then first when I was reading, you know, how they are saying maybe that is his piety or our piety, therefore he's saved. Then first I was thinking it sounds so mundane, like, you know, just mundane. And then I thought, but no, this, like, actually it is very sweet. That actually shows how humble they are and how much faith they have. Mm. They don't know Krishna as God, but even they have so much faith in Vishnu as well that he will know, he will protect who he has to protect. And also, I was thinking it is so nice how they are living with Krishna in his abode, their eternal eternally liberated souls, but they just think we are completely ordinary people, and they just think everything is happening under material influence. But then I was thinking, and also like Krishna, if that is how the Vrajavasis speak, that means Krishna must be really enjoying it.
Like,
no,
that's so much fun.
He must be like really liking it, that they are not
aware.
Yeah, like even Krishna is so humble actually.
Oh, he has his moments. The thing that really captured my interest was that Krishna became heavy in two occasions with a completely different result. Like, he became heavy so that Yashoda would set him down, and he became heavy to kill Trinavata. And I was meditating on this, and then I was trying to make sense of it. And this is the way Prabhupada was talking, it was very sweet. And then when I was researching Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gave insight into what Prabhupada was actually saying. And it was delightful, actually. He said that the reason that Krishna became heavy so that Yashoda had to pull him down was because he knew Trinavata was coming, and he knew that his intention was to capture both Yashoda and Krishna and to take them away and eat them.
Eat them?
Yeah, he was a Rakshasa that ate humans. So his intention was that. So Krishna knew that. This little one-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. He knew that. So he didn't want Yashoda to suffer. So, and he had a desire to fly high in the air. So, you know, both purposes could be so. But, you know, so that was one interesting thing. And then with Trinavata, he became heavy to kill the demon. I just found it interesting. So that for me, it was an interesting lesson for me, because everything depends on the way we're relating with Krishna. What is our mentality? If we're acting as a surrendered, loving servant, like Yashoda Mahi is, then he's going to use his energies for our benefit. But if we have a separatist mentality and we think we can do things, then he's going to use his energies in a different way. So I sort of found that very, I don't know, it's just something that caught me. That, you know, we have to be careful how we deal with this Krishna, even if he's in the mood of a one-year-old boy. He's very powerful.
And then also I found it really nice, like how the Vrajavasis react. Like first Mother Yashoda cries, and then everybody immediately comes. They don't first, you know, clean the house or look for their own children or do their own things. They immediately come running, and then all together they look. And then also I was thinking, it's so nice how they live in the little village, and the demons just fall from the sky, and the other day a demon appears from nowhere, and this and that, but they have such a nice, like they just, they have so much faith that Lord must be knowing what it means. Like nowadays, they would call the army and the police and then do scientific research where the demon came from and how we can kill them all, and like they don't have.
Yeah, they don't have like preoccupation once it's done. Their absorption is very different. Mm-hmm. It is not the absorption in demon.
Mm-hmm.
It's done, finished, story over, and they get on with their lives.
Absorption in Krishna.
Yeah.
We can learn from that. When something happens to us, do we absorb ourselves in Krishna, or what happened? Just a little checklist of where we're at. Okay. So let's hear from Gauga Samhita. One day, as he played on her lap and she followed him, Nanda's wife could no longer hold her infant boy, because he became as heavy as a mountain. She was astonished, thinking, how has my infant boy become heavy as a mountain? She placed him gently on the ground at once, and she wondered, how has this happened? The powerful demon Trinavarta, who had been sent by Kamsa, appearing as a circling whirlwind, grabbed the handsome playing infant boy. In Gokul, there was blinding darkness and a terrible roar. For an hour, the dust impeded everyone's vision, so that Yashoda could not see her son in the courtyard. Bewildered and crying, she gazed at the roofs of the houses in Braj. When she could not see her son, she fell to the ground unconscious. She loudly and pitifully wept, like a cow whose calf had died. Filled with love, and their faces covered with tears, the gopis also wept as they searched here and there for Nanda's son. Going 800,000 miles into outer space, Trinavarta became troubled, thinking that the infant on his shoulder had become as heavy as Mount Sumeru. The demon wanted to drop Krishna, but the tiny Supreme Personality of Godhead steadfastly held on to his neck. When the demon cried, "Let go! Let go!" the wonderful infant Krishna strangled and killed him. The demon then merged into Lord Krishna's effulgence, as lightning merges into a dark monsoon cloud. The demon and the infant fell from the sky onto a boulder. The sound of the fallen body breaking into millions of pieces filled all directions and made the earth tremble. The weeping gopis saw the infant sitting silently on what remained of the demon's back, and so they quickly brought him to his mother and gave him to her. The gopis said, "Yashoda, you have no right to embrace this child. You have no kindness. Your own words show how cruel you are. In the blinding darkness, who took your infant? In the blinding darkness, who took her infant from her lap and abandoned him? You were so merciless that in the terrifying moment, you placed your infant boy on the ground." Mother Yashoda said, "How did my child become as heavy as a mountain? I don't know. That is why, during the terrible whirlwind, I place him on the ground." The gopi said, "Oh, beautiful one, don't lie. Oh, Yashoda, now free from all trouble, this infant, the milk still in his mouth, is as light as a flower." Shinarad said, "When infant Krishna was thus returned to the gopis and gopas headed by Nanda, they became very happy and excitedly spoke amongst themselves. Yashoda took the infant, made him again and again drink from her breast, smelled his head, and dressed him in nice clothes. Then, bewildered, she spoke to Rohini. She, Yashoda, said, "Fate has given me only one son. I don't have many sons. But to that one son, so many dangers are coming at every moment. Today he escaped from death's mouth. If he had died, what would have happened? What would I do? Where would I go? Where would I live then? Many demons, as strong as thunderbolts and terrible to see, hate my son, my baby son. Oh, fate, how will we be happy? My wealth, body, palace, and many jewels are all only of use as long as they make my son happy. I will worship Lord Hari, give charity, do great public welfare work, and build 100 temples. Then my boy will be victorious over all dangers. Then my son will make me happy. I will become like a blind stick, immobile with bliss. Oh, dear Rohini, I will take my son and go to the kingdom of fearlessness." Shinarad said, "At that time many learned brahmanas came to Nanda's palace. Nanda and Yashoda worshipped them and gave them seats. The brahmana said, 'Oh Nanda, oh Yashoda, queen of Braj, don't lament. We will protect your son. He will live for a long time.' After saying this, the exalted brahmanas with new twigs, kusha grass, pure sacred water, prayers from the Rigsama and Yajurvedas, and many auspicious blessings, properly performed the yajna and worshipped the sacred fire. In this way, they establish the protection of child Krishna. Shri Narad said, to the Brahmanas, Nanda gave 100,000 cows, 1 million gold coins, 1,000 jewels, and 100,000 opulent garments. When these exalted Brahmanas had gone, Nanda invited the gopis, fed them sumptuously, honored them, and gave them many beautiful garments and ornaments. Shivalasva said, what pious deeds did Trinavada perform in his previous birth that he merged into Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Shri Narad said, he was Saharaksha, a powerful king of Pandudesh. He was a devotee of Lord Hari, a follower of religion, a performer of yagyas, and a giver of charity. On the shore of the Reva, at a very special place known with filled with flowering vines, he enjoyed pastimes with 1,000 beautiful women. When Devasamuni happened to come there, the king did not bow down to offer respects to him. The sage then cursed him, saying, O evil-hearted one, become like a demon. Become a demon. When the king fell at his feet, the sage gave him a blessing, saying, O king, the touch of Sri Krishna's form will give you liberation. Because of Devasa's curse, the king became Trinavata in his next life, and by the touch of Krishna's form, he attained liberation. Mr. Vasamuni seems to be quite active in his cursing business. That's not the first time we've read this. Let's hear from Ananda Vrindavan Temple.
One blissful day, during Krishna's first year, Yashoda lifted up her resplendent jewel-like son while passing through the main chamber of the palace. She lovingly fondled and caressed him. With his perfect intelligence, Krishna immediately perceived some danger. Employing his yogmaya potency, Krishna decided to reveal an ecstatic childhood pastime to show compassion to those dotting in the material world. Thinking thus, Krishna made his body so heavy that he forced his mother to set him down. Mother Yashoda, who is worshipable by all the three worlds, suddenly felt very tired and carrying her heavy son. As a creeper hangs down from the weight of ripened fruits, similarly Mother Yashoda bent over from the heavy weight of her maternal affection. Afraid of dropping her beloved son, Yashoda carefully sat Krishna down. By the sweet will of the Lord, Yogmaya influenced Yashoda's mind. Without the slightest worry, she left Krishna alone outside the house and went inside to perform other domestic duties. Mother Yashoda had no idea that she had left Krishna in a dangerous position. Yashoda's bewilderment had no other apparent cause than the all-powerful manifestation of her son's majesty. Realizing her mistake, upon entering the house, Yashoda quickly ran back to Krishna. Meanwhile, a demon named Trinavart descended upon Vrindavan. Taking the form of a huge cyclone, he terrorized all the people and animals. The whirlwind created by a demon seemed like an exhalation of hot breath from the wives of thousands of snakes burning in separation from their husbands. It appeared as if the earth transformed into a blacksmith's bellow, emitting a loud sound in all directions. Or was it the ears of elephants controlling the four directions, which looked like large flat trays used for winnowing, again flapping back and forth, causing the whole sky to fall down? The body of Trinavarta, full of high winds and a dense covering of dust, resembled the body of a diseased man infected with ignorance and passion due to fever and cough. Although a crooked person may externally show some sweetness, he will never let anyone enter his bitter heart. Just as excessive wine drinking covers the intelligence and makes one go crazy, Trinavarta covered all directions with dense darkness. As a battlefield fills with darkness due to the movement of masses of elephant, similarly, Trinavarta's whirlwind body enveloped Vrindavan in a dense cloud of darkness. Trinavarta, an extremely powerful demon sent by Kamsa, disturbed the natural balance of the material world made of five gross elements. He converted the three worlds into one element, namely wind. Although the dust particles within that whirlwind danced joyfully, the Rajavasis felt greatly distressed. At its zenith, the whirlwind touched the heavens, and it was so dense that it blinded everyone on earth. It seemed like the cloud of smoke created by the Lord of the Snakes during the dissolution of the universe. Intent on killing Krishna, Trinavart quickly attacked with his powerful wills. He dropped a deadly shower of dust, grass, and broken pots on the people of Vrindavan. Mother Yashoda worried about her son's safety. She did not realize that her darling son, whose soft hand and feet possessed the beauty, fragrance, and coolness of a lotus flower, could easily kill the biggest giants or the immortal demigods in heaven. Suddenly, Trinavart kidnapped a tender baby who would soon cause his death. But Krishna, who is worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the demigods, did not feel the slightest pain or distress. The whirlwind sent the sweet fragrance of Krishna's body into the celestial abodes. Krishna happily assumed a powerful feature while contemplating how to kill the demon. Trinamurta felt that he was carrying a fire bound in a cloth, a deadly poison within his throat, or death personified. To satisfy the celestial damsel's desires of his darshan, Krishna rode the whirlwind into the heavens. He looked like a man running up a flight of stairs as he continuously rose upwards atop Trinamurta. When Krishna struck the demon with his hand, which smelled like musk and looked as splendid as the stem of a lotus, the demon's life air slowly left his body. Then with a final blow, Krishna crushed the demon to dust. Krishna looked like a blue sapphire locket hanging from the demon's throat. When they crashed on the ground, the demon died, but Krishna landed safely on the earth. Seeing this amazing feat, the Vrajvasis filled with joy. Though appearing as a mere baby, Krishna proved his supremacy by displaying his unlimited potency. The great whirlwind demon, who showered dust, rain, and clumps of earth all over Vrindavan, touched Krishna's body and attained the supreme fortune of becoming eligible for liberation. Thus, Trinamurta did the best possible act to purify his family line. When Yashoda could not find her son after the cessation of the storm, her heart turned into a desert of lamentation. At that time, she lost all patience, and unconsciousness personified appeared as her only companion. Feeling helpless and overwhelmed, Mother Yashoda collapsed on the earth. Though suffering immensely, Yashoda's faint breathing indicated that she still lived. Understanding her intense pain of lamentation, the Vrajvasis tried to revive Yashoda by sprinkling water on her face and speaking comforting words. They said, "O pious and learned lady, the extent of your good fortune is unlimited. Your son gives happiness to the eyes of everyone. The honey-sweet dealings of Krishna Kumar continually increases our attachment to him. Due to your purity, your son is still alive. O king and queen of Vrindavan, now we realize that all your fortune and prestige is caused by your illustrious son. My Yashoda, although you are apprehensive about your son's safety, you can give up your distress, for the illusion has left our village. Do not let your mind burn any longer. Lift up your son and rejoice." Thus reassured, Yashoda regained consciousness, but she was still in anxiety. She said, "Just a few minutes ago I could not tolerate the weight of my son, so I put him down, and then the demon captured him. Can you explain how a tiny baby can suddenly become so heavy that even his mother cannot carry him? I guess this must be due to my bad luck. Alas, how could my son, who is as soft as butter and cannot even tolerate the pain of my lap, endure the tremendous pain generated by the demon who attacked Vrindavan with a shower of grass, high winds, and pieces of bricks? Previously, Providence protected my son from the poisonous pest of Putana and the falling cart demon. Now I pray to him to always protect my beloved son. Alas, I got my son back because of the Lord's protection. From now on, I will never take him off my lap and put him on the ground. Quickly help me find my son. Where is he? Has the wind demon snatched him and carried him away? As long as I live, I will never again leave him outside alone." Saying this, Yashoda fell down unconscious. Sympathizing with the plight of Yashoda, the elderly gopis again tried to pacify her. Due to the burning of fire of lamentation, Yashoda's lotus face looked morose and took on the hue of a red lotus. Her sadness submerged the Vrajvasis in an ocean of distress. On the outskirts of village, where he had previously played upon the breast of Putna, Krishna Kumar triumphed over his enemy by smashing him on the earth. While vanquishing that demon, Krishna, the greatest of all relishers, looked like a blossoming Abrajita flower amidst a garden of thorns, or a blue lotus rising above a lake choked with tall reeds, or a small shining lamp atop a dense cloud of darkness. Krishna stood as embodiment of transcendental knowledge amidst an ocean of ignorance. He resembled a river of nectar flowing in a desert, or a flower of personified bliss atop of a tree of misery. Seeing the beautiful blue baby in a safe position, the crowds gradually dispersed. One person commented, "This low-class, faithless demon has kept the demigods from blessing us with their association." Taking the form of a whirlwind, he prevented all auspicious acts and tortured Mother Earth. Finally, he destroyed himself by the reaction of his heinous sin of attempting to kidnap the prince of Vrindavan. Since he did not even have enough piety to approach Krishna's house, he died outside of town instead. Someone else said, "Oh, look at this boy. He is the eternal Parabrahm and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The effulgence of his unlimited opulence is always expanding. He is an invincible razor-sharp sword, annihilating the Asuric kings and his awesome power." From the very beginning, Krishna established the glories of his name by killing the Putana demon. It is he who freed everyone from distress by destroying Shakatasur. He also demolished that demon who terrorized the three worlds. Another Vrajvasi said, "Like King Indra, Nand Maharaj must have performed severe austerities and done many good deeds to accrue such vast piety. As a result, Nand Baba received a boon that enabled his son to defeat formidable asuras like Putana and others. There is no other way to explain how all these demons met their death." Having accepted Krishna as the wealth of their lives, the Vrajvasis rejoiced upon finding him free from danger. Picking him up in their loving arms, they carried Krishna into Yashoda's inner chambers. The atmosphere filled with the happy news of Krishna's well-being. Witnessing the pleasure of the Vrajvasis also brought waves of bliss to the mind of Asurari Krishna, the destroyer of demons. Observing this joyful pastime of Krishna, the elderly gopi smiled and said, "Hey Bhagavati, you are worshipable by everyone in the world. Due to your good fortune, your son is now safe and happy." Such reassuring words greatly pleased the mind of Yashoda. The rain clouds forcefully poured water on a burnt-out forest. A fresh abundance of life reappears to beautify their forest with elegance and contentment. In a similar way, Yashoda looked refreshed and beautiful upon regaining her beloved son. Though happy, Yashoda felt somewhat anxious and confused by the unusual event. In this state of bewilderment, she said, "Where is he? Where is he?" Compassionately taking charge of Yashoda, the Vrajvasis gradually nursed her back to consciousness. At that time, Yashoda's eyes looked like a pair of lotus flowers moistened with cool drops of dew. Her name, fame, and position surpasses everyone in creation. Waking from her trance, Yashoda stood up and drowned in an ocean of joy upon beholding her attractive son. Other ladies glorified Krishna Kumar. "Hey Krishna, hey Krishna." A dying man receives new life by taking Sanjeevani Ras. Similarly, Yashoda, who nearly died in separation, revived upon meeting her dearest son Krishna. She felt she had retrieved an invaluable lost treasure. Sitting Krishna on her lap, she lovingly gazed at him with unblinking eyes. But being only semi-conscious, Yashoda could not relish the full bliss of Krishna's direct association. As her sleeping sense awoke in the service of her beloved son, she said, "Oh darling, from the time of your birth, you have caused so much trouble to your mother. Of course, this is not your fault, so how can I blame you? I am the one who left you outside and unprotected. this shows my heart is as dry as wood, and therefore I qualify as your mother in name only. But since I am known as your mother, you have never treated me cruelly. Although that demon kidnapped you, because of your innocence, you somehow escaped and returned. Oh, my beloved, your love for me is unprecedented and transcendental. I should be punished for my grave mistake. Out of intense motherly affection, Mother Yashoda suckled Krishna with her breast milk and put him to rest. Although appearing in a human form to act as a son of Yashoda, Krishna Kumar eternally exists as the personification of transcendental bliss.
Very
happy.
Hi.
Very nice.